ever feel that God is invisible? That he is absent from the world? That he might not be active right now? Do you ever wonder how we should act in a world where others seem more powerful? Where governments seem to be in total control? Where God's people get sidelined? Did you know there's a Bible book all about that? Over the next few weeks, I'm going to be sharing my sermon series from the book of Esther. Esther's a book where God's name doesn't even come up once. But when we look carefully, God is extremely active. It's a book with conspiracies, misuse of power, supposed coincidences, relationships, and far more. Are you intrigued? Well, let's dive in, shall we? Esther chapter 6, verses 1 to 3. That night, the king could not sleep. So he ordered the book of the Chronicles, the record of his reign, to be brought in and read to him. It was found recorded there that Mordecai had exposed Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, who had conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. What honour and recognition has Mordecai received for this? The king asked. Nothing has been done for him, his attendants answered. This evening, I wonder how in control you think the world seems. How in control do we think things really are? As we look at our day-to-day lives, it might seem pretty random, pretty inconsequential, pretty disorganised. Do you ever question whether our world is really under control? Perhaps you know the dread of things feeling the complete opposite, of things feeling out of control. In this bit of Esther, we're thinking about who is in control. That is the big question of this section. And there have been three main candidates so far. We saw the king, whose control disappeared really quickly. We saw Esther, who has a decree against her people that she can't seem to overturn. And last week we saw Haman. At best, it seems like the villain of the story, that's Haman, has the most chance of being in control. Or if you want to be really picky, perhaps you think his wife, who tells him what to do. But is that the best we can do in answering this question? Is that the way things are in this world that is missing God? At some point, I hope you're expecting this, we have to ask the question, well, what about God? Isn't he a candidate here? But if God exists, I'd see his hand in things. If God's in charge, I'd expect to see miracles daily. If God is there, he'd do big acts of power to prove that's the case. If we are thinking that, well, this evening in these three verses, here in chapter 6, we get a chance to refine our thinking. Because in Susa, tomorrow morning, there's going to be death. Do you remember where the curtains closed last week? Haman had raised the stakes. He'd begun to build an instrument for killing his enemy Mordecai. The stakes are high, 25 metres high. And whilst that's going on, Esther is preparing to approach King Xerxes at this banquet in order to save her people's life. This endangered believer is going into the place of ultimate power to mediate for her people. And in these three verses here, all those stories are coming together. All of the threads of the book of Esther are drawing together right here, right at the centre of this book, right in the middle of the story, just as death is looming its largest. What's going to happen? There's an old slogan that says, smile, things could be worse. So I did smile and things did get worse. Have you heard that before? Is that what's going on here in Esther? I mean, humanly speaking, there is no hope left. There is no way out. And so those curtains, they are drawing. And we're left to see what happens in the morning. But, quite unexpectedly, there is an extra scene to the tale. There's an extra moment in the story. In the middle of the night, we find ourselves in the king's bedroom. And in these three verses, we get to think about who's really in charge. So let's have a look at this three-verse episode, shall we? And see what's going on. Who is in charge? Well, the first answer you could give me this evening is this. No one. There is no one in charge. It's just chaos and coincidence. How could you get to that answer? Well, have a look at verse 1. Let's read the story. That night, the king could not sleep. I mean, I'm sure we've all been there before. You're lying in your bed, the lights are off, and you notice that you're awake. For me, it goes like this. I notice that I'm not sleeping. I start to think to myself, I'm not sleeping. And I start to think, you should really get to sleep, because if you don't, you'll be up for hours. And then I'm up for hours. It's one of those moments of everyday life that's a real pain, isn't it? But that is all it is. It's just a sleepless night, isn't it? Just notice what it is that keeps the king awake this night. Just have a look. It's precisely nothing. Everywhere else in the Bible, when there is a sleepless night, there is a reason for it. We're given a reason for it. We are told why that person couldn't sleep. A dream, an event. But here, there is none of that. I mean, perhaps it was the cheese from Esther's banquet last night. Perhaps it's the knocking of the wood as Haman's pole is being constructed outside. Perhaps it's the suspense of what's going on with Esther and Haman. I mean, who was that banquet for anyway? Still don't know. But we're not told. It's just a sleepless night. So what happens next? Verse 1. Xerxes orders the book of the Chronicles, the record of his reign, to be brought in and to be read to him. Just clock what he could have done there. We've been told all about his stuff throughout the whole of this story. He could have gone for food. There's a lot of it in this story. He could have gone for a midnight snack. He could have reached for the drink and chosen a customised goblet that's been unused before. He has loads of those. He could have gone for a walk around his lavish garden. He could have even gone to visit his collection of women from chapter 2. Remember them? But he chooses to have the history of his reign read to him instead. I mean, this would be the equivalent of having the phone book read to you. It's not an exciting read. I mean, perhaps that's the plan. Bring me the book of memorable deeds, Xerxes says, which are all about him, of course. It's all about my greatness if I'm the king of Persia. Bring me that long, dusty book of how great I am. And just read a little bit of it for me. Which bit, your majesty? Oh, you know, just any old bit, all great. So the reader opens the book, page 3074 of the Annals of King Xerxes, year 7 of his rule. Mordecai the Jew exposed Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, who had conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. And Xerxes bolts upright. What was done to reward that man, he says. The young men respond, oh, nothing's been done. Do you remember back to chapter 3? We were expecting something to be done for Mordecai there, do you remember? But instead it says, after these events, King Xerxes honoured Haman. For the king of Persia to not honour someone is uncharacteristic. You would want to honour someone. You want to honour people who save your life, just in case another threat comes your way. You'd want people to do something to stop it. I mean, if there's no reward, why would you bother? And there we shout, cut. Middle of the night scene ends. Who's in charge? It's just a standard night, isn't it? The king can't sleep. He reads a history book. Are the characters from the story so far involved? Well, the end. But you notice no one there is acting out of character. It's a perfectly normal situation. In many ways, it sounds, it feels just like a normal day in the king's life. It sounds pretty unremarkable. I mean, it sounds pretty much like my life, actually. I mean, I don't have anyone read me bedtime stories. But the gist of this is pretty average, isn't it? It's pretty unremarkable. It's pretty much normal. But as we did that scenario, I'm hoping you're thinking to yourself, that seems a little bit too coincidental. I want to show us that we actually are meant to think that. So let's move along this line here on screen. Maybe we'd say that someone is in charge. Let me show you again. Rewind the tape. It's nighttime in Susa. Everyone is pottering away. Esther and Mordecai are working at what to say at the banquet tomorrow. Haman is hammering wood together. He's making his steak. And King Xerxes is heading to sleep. And we join verse 1 again. That night, the king couldn't sleep. To be more precise, that exact phrase there reads this. Sleep fled the king. The gist there in this sentence is that someone took the sleep away from King Xerxes. In a later version of Esther, someone added, God took the sleep away from King Xerxes. They noticed that we're missing who did it. And when you read really carefully, all three of these verses are like that. They're all passive. Someone is moving the strings. Just have a look. The king gave orders and someone comes to read to him. We're not told who. Verse 2, it was found by someone that Mordecai saved the king's life. Xerxes asked if someone has honoured Mordecai. And the attendants say, well, no one has done it. You see, the language here is really vague. It'd be really simple to stick in the subjects. In fact, if you wrote it the way you normally would, you'd say this. The king ordered for the books to be read, and one of his attendants read them, and noticed that Mordecai had exposed Bigthan and Teresh. Just notice those two people are named. What did I do to one of them, said King Xerxes. And the attendants say, you didn't do anything, sire. You could write that, couldn't you? It'd be really simple to write that, but the author doesn't do that. And that is deliberate. They go out of their way to make this vague. We're meant to be thinking, someone is in charge. Someone is doing this. I mean, the coincidences of the whole thing. Xerxes is unable to sleep. Think about it just for a moment. It doesn't take much scientific research to know that drunkards like King Xerxes are notoriously good sleepers. I mean, the wine has been flowing for days. And the implication here, by calling this out, is this isn't a regular occurrence. This is odd. The choice to have this book read instead of other things he could have done. Is that just a coincidence? The fact the book fell exactly into the right position 5 years ago, 7 years into his reign, when Mordecai just happens to be mentioned. It just so happens that this moment of Persian history is repeated to Xerxes. And the fact that he didn't honour and recognise Mordecai back then is totally out of character. Cut. Who's in charge then? I mean, someone appears to be making things work together, don't they? There are too many threads coming together in an ordered way, aren't there? And those things coming together, holding history together for at least 5 years so far, affecting sleep, affecting the page numbers, affecting the forgetfulness of the king, well, that someone's got to be pretty powerful, don't they? All these threads, they come together in a very particular way. So perhaps we should be seeing God here. I mean, if someone has control of all these things and is working them for the good of his people, as we're going to see, well, then the answer can only be God. Let's rewind the tape. Esther is ironing her dress for the banquet. Haman is finding the toolbox because he needs his hammer. And verse 1, the king that night could not sleep. I mean, you might be thinking to yourself, to tie this all down to a sleepless night is to read too much into this. But this is the book of Esther. And everything we've seen so far plays into this. Just think about all the coincidences that have happened so far. The king allowing Esther to come in. Haman being told that Mordecai, specifically Mordecai, isn't bowing. Esther winning the king's favour. In fact, when you do that, you have to push it back even further, don't you? Esther's looks that make her pleasing in the king's eyes. I mean, we've got a biology teacher here. That's genetics, isn't it? That takes parents, grandparents, great-grandparents. I mean, that is a lot of control, isn't it? For the Jews to be here at the furthest point in their history, at this moment in Susa, this is the furthest point in their whole journey in the whole Bible, if you look really carefully. No human plan, no marketing strategy could have engineered these events as they unfold, let alone the king's sleepless night right at the centre of them. And as we have this book placed into the Bible, it gives us a wider context as well. It tells us of a God who made a promise to keep his people and raise a deliverer from them. Haman's actions here undo all of that. So for the cards to be falling this way, we are safe to say, theologically, this is God at work. If you want one more piece of proof, if you were to plot all of this out on the calendar, I know this is what you will do when you go home, plot all of this out on the calendar, you would notice, if you had a Jewish calendar to hand, this seemingly random night that the king happens to not be able to sleep is the same night before the Exodus took place in the Jewish calendar. See, in this place of Susa, which happens to be very close to where Abraham started his journey, God is working to bring about his plans. And the amazingness of all of that is, It all rests on seemingly normal means. It all rests on the fact that one guy has a sleepless night. Great. Well, that's great, Dave. How does that help us? Why have you spent this evening talking about this? I mean, there's three verses. You could have done that in a few seconds. Because when we see this, when we get this, when we understand this, it should give us confidence. See, if we can see that God is at work, even through these seemingly benign moments, that we can trust that he is working even when he appears missing. If we remember this story of Esther in those moments, we can know that even now, God is working in the small details. Just put yourself in the mind of a Jew in Israel during Esther's day. A Jewish person living in Israel during Esther's day. You've heard there's a decree from the king to wipe out your people. But you probably don't know anything about Esther. Well, you're even less likely to know a thing about Mordecai. And I'm almost certain you'd have no idea that the king of Persia has had a bad night's sleep. In fact, I doubt that anyone else at the time, except those attendants, knew that the mighty King Xerxes couldn't sleep. In fact, I'd hazard the guess that Xerxes didn't even give it a second moment's thought. Yet as you read this story of Esther, you see that this was the moment that everything starts to change. From this moment on, we're going to see everything gets reversed. And the same God who was at work in the lives of those Jews long ago is the same God that we serve today. God doesn't change. He can be trusted to orchestrate the events of our ordinary day-to-day lives in such a way that brings glory to himself. Perhaps you'll have a sleepless night tonight. Perhaps you won't. Perhaps you'll have a conversation this week that seems normal and meaningless to you. Perhaps something will happen this week that you won't give a second moment's thought to. If you were to look at our world, things can seem meaningless. Things can seem unintended. Things can seem out of control. But when you think about it, what amazing control God must have to make all those things work together. I mean, you could call it coincidence. You could read Esther that way. But you would have to say that it's all a coincidence that happens to fulfill God's promises. God's promises to Abraham. And you'd have to say that God constantly fulfills those promises through coincidences. I mean, if we're in any doubt this evening, you see it most clearly at Calvary. As Peter explains in Acts chapter 4, Herod and Pontius Pilate met together with the Gentiles and the people of Israel in the city to conspire against Jesus. Just happened one day. That's what they did. But he continues, doing what God's power and will had decided beforehand should happen. There's God's hand. See, the final page of this story is written, and God has it all in hand. Like the people of Esther's day, we might feel like nothing is going right. People may say to you, smile, because things could get worse. It might seem there is no hope, there is no way out, humanly speaking. The story of Esther says, but God. And brothers and sisters, but God makes all the difference. On that night, the king couldn't sleep. But God used that to save his people and bring about his Messiah. Thank you so much for listening. Any feedback or questions can be sent to podcast@david-couch.com, and I'll catch you again next time.